good evening. It's me, Dracky Bam Bam, here on 93.3 WMMR here in Philadelphia. I'm in my bat cave, and I guess we could say he's in his feather nest. And together right now, we're going to bring back some of that old-time religion. The guy that doesn't do a lot of talking, an original member of them Skinny Black Crows, and a co-founder, but he does a hell of a lot of talking with that guitar. Christopher's younger brother, on the line with us right now, please welcome Mr. Rich Robinson. How are you, Rich?
How you doing, man?
Doing great, Rich. Good to hear from you. We have a show coming up with you. It's going to be great to see you at the Sellersville Theater. The show will be May 28th. Some tickets do remain at st94.com. And Rich, you're touring behind your third solo album, Ceaseless Sight, which was released late last year. And you got the title for the album in a line in the song Down the Road. There's a line that says, "The Ceaseless Sight on the Horizon." Would you like to expand on that for us?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's more about just keeping your eye moving forward, you know, not really getting bogged down, not thinking about living, you know. It's almost like driving while looking in the rearview mirror, you know what I mean? It's more just about moving forward and just keeping your eye set on where you can go, you know, instead of where you've been.
Well, that seems to be something that you've always been about, moving forward, Rich, even in the Black Crows. Now, you started this record and wrote a lot of this record and recorded it with your drummer, Joe Magistro.
Mm-hmm.
So you two guys did a lot of the work, but any of the other guys in the band get to put any input in besides just playing on it?
Well, it's basically just me and Joe when we went into the, we've made three records together, he and I, since we started playing together in 2003. And so really just kind of going with the two of us, you know, and we cover all the bases. You know, we've been fortunate to play with really cool people, and this time we have a couple of great musicians from, one guy's from Atlanta, his name's Ted Pecchio. He played with Tedeschi Trucks and Earl Bruce Hampton, and then there's another guy named Matt Slocum, who's from Birmingham, or actually from Massachusetts, but he grew up in Birmingham, Alabama. A great keyboard player, played with a lot of great bands. And so we made this record and then kind of put this band together, and we've been touring on it. It's been great.
You recorded this album in upstate New York. Are you in upstate New York right now? Is that where you live, Rich?
No, I live in L.A. now.
And you did some work up in Woodstock. You recorded your Woodstock sessions there, and you recorded this album there as well?
Yeah, I recorded my last two records there and the Woodstock sessions. And it's some friends of mine who own a studio up there. It was built by the same guy who built Levon's studio.
Yeah, Levon Helm. And you had his daughter sing on a few tracks, correct?
Yeah, Amy came and sang on a few songs, which is great.
She sang on three tracks off the brand new album. Now, she's not out on the road with you guys.
No, but I played New York last year, and we had some friends come down, and she was one of my friends who came and sang, which was great.
And once in a while, you do have a couple special guests jumping up on stage. Last week, you were joined with one of your, we could say, a former member of the Black Crows getting up there, and you did Wiser Time. It was great to see you and Luther Dickinson back up on stage together.
Yeah, absolutely. Luther Dickinson came and sat in, and, you know, I did an acoustic tour in December of some of the shows in the South and Midwest, and when I played Mississippi, Luther came and we played about six songs together. And so when we were playing in Wanee, Luther was on with his band called The Word, which is him and Robert Randolph and John Medeski and his brother Cody, and a really cool, you know, outfit. And so when he was there, I was like, man, you know, come on up. And it's always fun, great to see Luther, hear him play.
And what a treat that was for everybody in the audience. Making the record and just like playing live, too, is it tough for you to be on both sides of the window, you know, behind the console and cutting the vocals and cutting the guitar?
You know, I just kind of get in there and do it. You know, 25 years of being in the studio, and, you know, the Crows made 10 or 12 records,
mm-hmm.
plus records that never came out, you know, demos and stuff. And then just, you know, making my three solo records and a couple of EPs and those kinds of things. I really love being in the studio and just putting together music. And to me, I don't really think about roles or whatever. I just kind of get in there and, you know, just do it.
So you're pretty comfortable with a microphone in front of you taking the lead vocal?
Yeah, well, I mean, at first, it's cool. It's, you know, I'd written all the music for the Crows for years.
Yeah.
And Chris, you know, being a singer, he would always get out and sing and write lyrics. And so that's a form of expression. And for that time, I put all of my energy into that form of expression. And it's really this amazing, esoteric creation, because it affects people in such a way. It's a it's kind of like this emotional delivery system. You know, you create this music and you can really alter moods and enhance certain things. I mean, music is such a ethereal medium. And so I always really just focused on that, and I was really happy to be able to make music and have that be my focus. But when I started making my own records, I really started finding joy and a huge appreciation and understanding to sort of bring that whole full circle and to be able to use this music, sort of create this music, and then, you know, melodies and lyrics, and then how the whole thing comes together. And so it was just a really cool, interesting, another facet to what I love so much.
And speaking of love and music and your heroes and your influences, you took a break, or even before this tour went out on the road, you did some dates on the Experience Hendrix tour.
Yeah, that was cool. I'd never done anything like that, and that came up. When you're in a band, a successful band, you're kind of in a bubble. You know, the Crows toured so much.
Yeah.
Just like every year but between the times that we always seemed to break up for a couple of years, it seemed like it was just constant touring. And so, it's really difficult to get out and play with other musicians. And so to be able to do that and play with, and then play Jimi Hendrix music, which has always been one of my favorites anyway, such a cool thing.
What songs did you perform at on this Experience Hendrix tour, Rich?
I did, I'm a huge Band of Gypsies fan.
Okay.
So I would do, what did I do? Message to Love, which was really cool. And then I did Spanish Castle Magic, and I would do Up from the Skies. And sometimes I sat in on All Along the Watchtower. I think I did sat in on Red House a few times.
You mentioned Hendrix's Up from the Skies. You recorded that in Record Store just passed a couple of weeks ago, and you released that as a B-side live cover on vinyl, and the A-side was the title track of your album, The Ceaseless Sight, as a special 7-inch single.
Yeah, which is cool.
Yeah.
I mean, vinyl is saving us in a sense, it seems like we're also, everyone seems to be missing that human experience and also missing the actual experience of listening to music. It's become so convenient. It seems like there's no discipline or appreciation for that music. With a vinyl, you take it home. There's a tactile experience you have. You're holding this massive thing in your hand, and there's artwork on there, and that artwork kind of reaches out to you, and then you take the plastic off and you open it up, and there's information in there, and there's song listings, and oh wow, look at this, this is who played on this thing, this is who produced it, this is who played keyboards, wow, this person guessed it on it. You take the vinyl out, you go place it on this thing. I mean, there's a whole ritual to the whole thing, and there's a whole process to the whole thing. Then when you put the vinyl down and you put the needle on, then you have to listen vigilantly because, a side of a record is actually really short. It's not, it's not like 7 hours of, or it's 10,000-15,000 continuous songs. I mean, it's literally there. And it brings back the importance and the focus onto listening to what's going on. There is no visual around there. It's just you're hearing this thing and you're sitting and you're experiencing this. And so I think you have, ultimately or innately, you have more respect for that process, because it is a process. And so, last year was the biggest year in vinyl since 1994.
And it keeps going up and up and up, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, because I think people are understanding that.
And for Record Store Day, that was a limited edition 7-inch. But you pressed your brand new third solo album, Ceaseless Sight, on a colored splattered vinyl as a double album, too.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's a marbled, It's a double album, and it's not a double album, but it's on two vinyl, and it's a marbled vinyl. They can do such cool things with vinyl, and then, people are really getting back into it and the sound quality and kind of chucking the whole convenience thing for what's better. You know what I'm saying?
What was one of the first records that you ever purchased, Rich? For me, it was the Rolling Stones' Through the Past Darkly and the Banana Splits.
Yeah, there you go. My dad always had vinyl around, so growing up, it was always around. But some of the first things that I bought, I remember getting like AC/DC, If You Want Blood, You Got It, which was a live record.
Yes, yeah.
And then a little bit later, what else did we get? My brother also bought a bunch of records, and so a lot of times I didn't really have to go out and do it because he would do it.
Always letting the big brother do the dirty work. You recall any artists at the time?
I remember being way into Prince early on.
Nothing wrong with that. The guy's a genius.
Yeah, like Dirty Mind or the first record. And then started getting into bands like R.E.M. and a lot of alternative bands coming from Georgia. You know?
Well, it's your hometown. And you come from a musical family. Your father put out a few big hits in the 50s, and may you rest in peace. You still play the guitar? The original guitar your parents gave you, an acoustic guitar, do you take that out on the road with you? Did you just record it? And speaking of guitars, you lost a lot of guitars in Hurricane Sandy.
My father had had this amazing old guitar, and he gave it to me before he passed away. But I always keep it with me. All of our gear, the Crow's gear, and so are a lot of other bands.
Mm-hmm.
I think Norah Jones and Lenny Kravitz and all these people had gear in Jersey. And, Sandy took about, I don't know, 60, 70 guitars of mine and all my amps and, you know, my sitar and Sarod and all my stuff and, you know, just pretty much everything you could think of.
Oh, that's a heartbreaker. Now, can any of that be replaced or has been replaced?
Yeah, a couple of guitars were refurbished, but, you know, look, it is what it is. I love those guitars are great, but they're wood.
Yeah.
You know, and I can find some other wood.
And a guitar we see a lot strapped around you, your own signature series now that Gibson gave you.
Yeah, which is really cool.
Very cool. Congratulations. And that's, what is that, 335 Gibson?
They made it based on this 335 I've had. I bought it at the end of Shake Your Moneymaker, and I made, you know, Southern Harmony on it, and, you know, all the records on it.
335, that's what Chuck Berry plays? Am I correct on that? Or?
Chuck Berry played a 355 that had a stereo switch on it.
Oh.
So if you see them that have these knobs on the above where all the volume knobs are, it does this thing, and it's the same kind like as Lucille, like, you know, B.B. King's guitar. But, I always like this one in particular, this 335 that I have, and it's just a really cool guitar. Clapton played one, you know, at the Albert Hall, and so it's really, really historic, really cool instrument.
We're mentioning Clapton here, Chuck Berry, B.B. King, just to name a few Rock and Roll Hall of Famers. Hey, Rich, you ever ponder the thought of you and the Black Crowes entering the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
I don't really think about it, and I don't really know if that would ever happen.
I don't know about that, buddy.
I mean, you have to kind of be voted in, and, you know, I don't know. But we've been doing it long enough, I guess. This year is our 25-year anniversary, so.
You're eligible, yeah. Mm. And we found out the bad news early in the year. The Black Crowes have split up, and hopefully that's not permanent. But since we're on the topic of the Black Crowes right here, can we ask you, Rich, personally, your three favorite Black Crowes albums?
I would have to say Southern Harmony being number one.
Okay.
It seems to be where we found ourselves. And then I would say Amorica and Three Snakes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's great to hear.
I just kind of feel like we were firing on all cylinders and really we're pushing ourselves musically and as a band and, you know, really doing what we needed to do.
Maybe we'll hear a couple of those chestnuts off the great Black Crowes catalog. And, of course, you have three albums into your arsenal, solo stuff, as we see and welcome Rich Robinson of the Black Crowes playing a very rare solo show at the Sellersville Theater. Tickets are available at st94.com. Again, for tickets and information, the show's coming up May the 28th. Rich, you've recorded with many and toured with many, and I have to ask you, what was it like playing with Jimmy Page, and how did that even come about?
Well, we met, you know, we toured with Robert Plant on our first record.
That's right.
And it was, you know, we really befriended him and came, you know, he's a great person and really cool. And I remember when Page Plant got back together, it was early on in the tour that we were doing on our record, Amorica. And we were in London playing the Royal Albert Hall. We were doing two or three nights. And Robert called and said, can I bring Jimmy down? We're like, yeah, man, that'd be great. So he brought Jimmy down and, you know, we really hit it off, you know, as we did with Robert, you know, talked about music and it was cool and blah, blah, blah. And so the next, like, we had a day off after that, and we were playing in Paris, and Jimmy flew to Paris to come see us. He just wanted to come hang out, so we were like, yeah, man, come on, you know, and he got up and played with us, and we did a blues song, and he got up and played, and it was really great, and we got to hang out with him and got to know him. And so then that summer, when we were on tour with the Stones, in between those like the Stone shows, we would go play shows with Paige Plant. So it'd be like three nights at Wembley Stadium with the Stones, and then we would drive up to, you know, Glasgow, Scotland, and some other places, and we'd go play with, you know, Jimmy and Robert. Like, probably the best summer of ever.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, holy shit. And so, so we just really became friends. We toured South America with them, and, you know, it was a really cool thing. And at the end of one of our tours, Jimmy had been doing this charity event in London, and he wanted to try something different. So I don't know. He had asked us if we would come and basically play with him and play some Zeppelin songs and play this. And we were like, yeah, man, we would love to. And so this was another summer, and we were on tour with Aerosmith in Europe. And so we went down there, and Joe and Steven went down, and, you know, we learned that we picked like four or five Zeppelin songs, and one of them was In My Time of Dying, and,
yeah,
you know, Whole Lot of Love, and a couple of other ones. And, you know, it was just so electric, you know, like that was our music, you know what I mean? And we,
yeah,
were able to just go in this rehearsal. I remember we rehearsed for like a week, and just to get these songs down, and then flew to London and then learned these songs with Jimmy. It went so well, and it was so easy that it was just one of those things that was like, man, this is unbelievable.
Man, you have the best summers ever. I'm so jealous. Do you ever get like goosebumps, like looking on the other side of the stage and there's Jimmy Page? Like, oh my God, I'm playing on stage with Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin or in the studio?
No, you know, I mean, because he was kind of our friend.
Okay.
You know what I mean? We just kind of looked at him like, I mean, you know, we just had a job to do. And it was just more of like, hey, man, we're here for him, and we're here to do the best we can, and we can't get bogged down in that.
I'm thinking in my head, was it anything like, you know, in the movie Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll with Chuck Berry, Tone Keith? No, you play Carol like this. You know, the bend here.
No, you know, Jimmy was, with the utmost respect, and we were that way to him, too, you know.
And you could tell on the recording, Live at the Greek, you guys just gelled. It worked out perfect.
Yeah.
Ever think about writing a book on yourself, Rich?
No.
No, not yet. Not yet.
Not yet.
All right. Well, I can't wait to see you, Rich, and everybody here in Philadelphia can't wait to see you. Any Philadelphia memories?
You know, I mean, we always would come play the Tower Theater, which was always really cool,
mm-hmm.
or that Electric Factory place, and Philly audiences were always really unbelievable, you know, just way into it. And, you know, we always loved coming there.
One of the first shows you ever did, I believe, here in Philadelphia that I saw, yeah, and I think it was 10th and Arch Street, the old Trocadero. It was a middle of
the
week.
Trocadero. I remember that with Junkyard.
I was watching MTV, you know, earlier in the month. You guys were just breaking. They just added your video, Jealous Again. And I was like, who are these guys in the velour jackets, the cool cropped hair, looking like the faces, the, you know, the pointy boots? I got to see them. And you were playing the Trocadero. And I went, I stood on the floor, I stared at Chris and you, and me and my best friend, Haro, and our jaws just dropped. Like, these guys are the bomb. They're the shit. They got it. They know rock and roll. I mean, everybody else was doing hair metal, and you were listening to Exile on Main Street, Humble Pie, the Rolling Stones, the Faces. And the show was empty, and I just stood there on the floor and watched you guys. And boy, did you bring it. I'll never forget that.
Well, you were the one that thought that.
Well, the rest of the world caught up pretty damn quick,
yeah,
Rich.
They did. Yeah.
Anything you'd like to say to your 93.3 WMMR fans here in Philadelphia, Rich, before we let you go and see you at the Sellersville Theater?
Look forward to the show, man. I hope everyone comes out. It'd be great to see everyone.
May 28th, Sellersville Theater, the man on the line with us, one of the founders of the Black Crowes, Mr. Rich Robinson. Rich, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to pretend to be my friend.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate it. Hey, this is Rich Robinson. You're listening to Jackie Bam Bam on 93.3 WMMR.